Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and today's a cloudy Monday in Bushwick. Here we are at Roberta's Pizza. This is where the station is based. Today's show is brought to you by White Oak Pastures. Their cattle are raised in a manner that has stood the test of time. It begins with a southern sunshine, unpolluted country air, and fertile coastal soil. The cattle are allowed to roam the pastures and graze freely on the sweet native grasses. White Oak Pastures' all-natural grass-fed beef has been available in all of the Whole Foods stores in the Mid-Atlantic states. We hope that you'll support their program through your purchase of our beef through one of these Whole Foods stores. Check out whiteoakpastures.com. So, I'm really excited. Today we have a guest who I'm just so happy to see again. It's Matt Greco, a chef from Char No. 4 in Borm Hill. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It's been too long since I've checked out the restaurant, but it seems to be going well.
Yeah, it's going very well.
It's in its second year or third?
No, yeah, September, mid-September will be our 2-year anniversary.
2-year anniversary. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
And that's your first restaurant as the executive chef. And
right.
Yeah, because before you were kind of hopping around.
I was a sous chef at a couple places in Manhattan.
So this is your baby.
This is the baby.
Cool.
Baby number one.
Char number one. Is there a char number two, three, four? No.
Yeah, no, that's just more a reference. There is a char number one, two, and three, and four. And what it's reference is to the grade of charring to the fresh oak barrels before bourbon is put into them to age.
Oh.
So char number four is actually the highest grade char, or the deepest of char,
and that you can't really go farther than that. You don't.
No, that's
go?
It. Yeah, okay. There's no five.
Yeah, it's just that would four. Be burnt.
Well, it is burnt. Yeah, oh. It pretty much is burnt. So
that would be ash then.
You would have that, no barrel.
That wouldn't be very tasty then. So, have you always been a whiskey and scotch aficionado, or?
I would say, yeah, naturally, you know, when I started cooking and, you know, you go to culinary school and you take your wine classes and that sort of thing, there was very little talk about, like, American spirits and that sort of thing. It was probably maybe, like, a couple of days worth out of the entire 2-month class, but I never really got too far into wine. I was just always, you know, I enjoy drinking beer and whiskey, really. Never really got too into scotch, but I think bourbon, you know, is such a much more balanced whiskey than scotch is.
That's what I meant to say. Whiskey and bourbon.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, so you took it upon yourself to educate yourself more and in turn explore that with the menu.
The part of the thing is the food concept was something I had been working on for several years, and then I met up with Sean Josephs and Michael Soompas, the proprietors over at Char No. 4, and Michael is this huge, like, bourbon. He's this huge bourbon and whiskey guy, and, you know, that was always like his kind of like dream to, like, eventually open a place that just had, like, one of the largest selections of bourbon. And he has this amazing collection, and a lot of our really rare stuff came from his own personal collection. Mm-hmm. So I got to get a little definitely a lot deeper into it and more education on the whole bourbon and whiskey aspect.
Cool.
And then I just, you know, naturally the concept that I had been working on, you know, some smoked meats and that sort of thing. And the idea was to have some smoked meats and try to like stay very seasonal. Mm-hmm. With all the vegetables and, you know, kind of bring a fine dining aspect to it, to a casual side of it too.
Cool. So you could come in there and snack and have a glass or two of whiskey.
Right.
Or you can have a nice whole meal.
Right. And we've done like, and that's the thing, you know, that was always kind of our, you know, our goal is like we've done, you know, we have a couple sandwiches on our menu and it's great to see like someone stop by, sit at the bar, have a glass of whiskey and a sandwich and, you know, go home. And then it's also really fun to have people come in and say, I want a tasting menu. Mm-hmm. We've done all kinds of during, you know, early springtime. We did, you know, a whole entire like lamb and whiskey pairing tasting cool. menu.
Yeah, you can have like the family style whole roasted something.
Right, and we've done that stuff too. Cool. We've done
suckling pig.
In fact, we just, you know, some people was like, hey, can we have a whole smoked pig? Yes, you know. And then we've done like I said, the lamb tasting that we did. We also did a whole tasting with Peak Beer, I guess a couple months ago.
We did that.
Peak
Beer. Okay, cool.
And it's that, like I said, there's that aspect of the restaurant too.
Nice.
And I think that what kind of the point of those tastings too is to kind of show people how well bourbon goes with food.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people just see it as also just kind of a drinking drink, and that it's also can be paired with a lot of food very well.
Well, I kind of have that first impression too, where when I you know have a glass of whiskey in front of me, I'm just kind of, it's so overwhelming. The flavors are just so robust in itself, and taking a sip just seems like it's in itself a meal. And I don't know what else to do, you know. So I like how you have these snacks and you have like smoked almonds and pastrami and stuff that you can kind of nibble at. I don't know about having a whole meal. And don't they usually do the whiskey or something like a cocktail before the meal? Or do you think that you can really just keep sipping throughout a long meal with something like bourbon or whiskey?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think
I have yet to try that.
I think one thing that, you know, that I think people, you know, don't need to be afraid of is that, you know, you can add water to whiskey.
Yeah, I was gonna
and
say.
Ice. And that's kind of, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, I grew up, my dad was a big, you know, that was kind of his drink of choice was whiskey. And it was like, you know, you drank it with some water and ice. And that's, you know, the fact of the matter is like bourbon is a Southern drink and it's hot in the South.
Yeah.
And so you want to add some ice to it.
Yeah, or soda, whiskey soda.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, I'll try that next time to ease myself into it.
Yeah, ease yourself into it.
Yeah, so I'm not slamming and then, gorging.
Right, right. And there's definitely a lot of them that can be very, you know, they can be very, like, spicy and, you know, like you said, very strong.
Sounds like a good date meal to me.
And also, too, we have
we
definitely have a nice, our cocktail program is all, you know,
homemade
bourbon based,
creative.
So therefore, you can you can have your drink.
What do you got right now? That's a real zinger.
The Kenny Perry.
What's that?
It is iced tea, mint, bourbon, and lemon.
Is that like a classic drink, or is it something you guys kind of made up? It sounds a little like something.
It's based off a classic.
Uh-huh. What about Long Island iced tea? How about, why don't you do that? That's a real classic.
I can't remember the last time I had a Long Island iced tea.
Yeah, you got to redo it. Reinvent it with some good liquors, not the dirt, you know, bottom of the barrel.
Right, right.
And that's how I remember it.
One thing that's kind of is for brunch, you know, we don't make our Bloody Marys with vodka. We make them with bourbon.
Oh, so, bourbon Bloody Mary.
Yeah. So that was, you know, again, I think it's very natural and, you know, something that's very simple that like people have realized that like, oh, wow, this works really well.
That sounds really nice and warm and spicy and kind of well-rounded.
Yeah, it's very good.
Ooh, I gotta
serve
come
it with
in there.
Some house-made pickles. You know, we make everything in house, so you know, make the pickles and you know, try to, which is always great because you can, you know, adjust the sweetness or saltiness to the actual drink.
Yeah, and I bet you're playing around with all different things to pickle right now at this time with, you know, not just cucumbers.
We have an entire, we have a fridge. It's called the pickle fridge at Char, and it's an entire region, and it's completely full of pickles. In fact, right now I'm a little worried that we actually don't have space in it. We have so many pickles right
they
now.
Last. Yeah,
yeah they do. So we still have some ramps from the springtime.
Oh, cool.
We try to use them up. I just got some really beautiful banana peppers.
Mm.
When we first opened Char, that's what I wanted the pickled chili to be on the menu.
Okay.
And I just didn't see any at the market. No one really had them. So
I'm growing them on my roof. You can have some.
I'll take more. Absolutely. Like we just got in, you know, about 20 pounds in the other day. They're really nice, beautiful. They're really good.
Perfect.
This year. They weren't around too much. Much last year. I didn't really see them. Like
that's
small,
funny.
You know, you see like a little bit,
mm-hmm.
or you'll see like the, you know, the Hungarian yellow wax, which
hot,
I think a lot
those
of
those are hotter.
Right, yeah.
The sweet banana peppers are really nice though. Maybe it's more popular this year. Maybe they were just more rare. I don't know, to grow.
Yeah, I don't know if people, if they just didn't come up or people started growing them. I didn't really see them for the past 2 years. So I definitely was, that was one of my, you know, ingredients that I wanted to have on the menu, and I kind of gave up on it because I didn't see it for a couple
yeah.
of years.
Well, congrats to that.
Yeah.
I always like the pickled, like little carrots. Carrots that are slender enough that you don't have to slice and you just pickle them. That's always a nice touch.
The little baby carrots?
Yeah, a drink or something.
Yeah, no one's going to complain about a pickled carrot.
Yeah. I like the ramps. So you got to stock up for the winter, right? So that you'll have enough pickles.
Yeah, I think you get excited about ramps and then you bring in like a, you know, 100 pounds of them and you're kind of lose your excitement after cleaning 100 pounds of ramps.
So what else pairs really well with whiskey? So we got pickles and you're thinking smoked meats is
yeah
one?
We've done
yeah it brings out the smokiness of the liquor.
Sure. And you know, I think some things that people, you know, one thing that we did I guess about a year ago, Sean and I did an article with Wine Spirits, and it was the whole pairing of bourbon and food.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of point was is to like show some obvious pairings,
mm-hmm.
With some of the dishes at the time, and it was also like late summer at the time, and then some dishes that weren't so obvious. You know, at the time we had you know, last late summer there was, you know, the baby beets were really nice, and so we had like a nice little small dish of baby beets with, you know, spiced pecans and like, you know, very light blue cheese like sauce dressing. You
okay.
know? And you know, I think that I don't think a lot
mixture.
Of people think of I mean, obviously we're going on classics here, blue cheese, beets, and pecans. No one's gonna again complain about that. But I think a lot of people don't consider, you know, beets and bourbon as a something that can go
great.
Well together. But yeah, any of those like vegetables that really have that like nice kind of earthy tone to them definitely go really well with bourbon. I mean, bourbon can kind of go with anything. We always joke around that it's kind of the unknown Riesling.
I'm still working on it. I'm not there yet. Riesling? That's like the weakling drink. No. All right, so I'm going to ask this question kind of early on. But so from your menu, what do you think is like the most date-worthy, romantic meal you could order, you know, paired with whiskeys? You know, what do we start out with here?
Start out with Char. I think that right now I would go with we have a nice chilled sweet corn and lobster soup.
Ooh.
And then, you know, always that's kind of a classic is our lamb pastrami.
Uh-huh.
House
cured lamb pastrami.
Yeah, house cured lamb pastrami. And right now, again, I wouldn't want to repeat corn again, but one of my favorite dishes, kind of
it's
like
it's corn
at the moment,
time now.
It's corn time. And if it was up to me, there'd be corn on every dish.
Yeah.
So definitely one of my all-time top five favorite ingredients is
Southern.
And the fact that, you know, that whiskey and bourbon is, you know, predominantly made from corn doesn't really hurt. You know, the cause. And then right now, one of my just kind of like favorite dishes at the moment is we have a bacon wrapped cod.
Ooh.
Again, you know, we cure our bacon and smoke it in house. And It's served with a corn and basil stew and a fennel broth.
Mm.
And it's just very light, even though there's bacon in it. Bacon is very a small part of the dish. And that's a really nice, light, summery, flavorful dish.
Sounds like very luxurious, too. I like that.
But they're, yeah, absolutely.
Flavors popping out at you.
You know, there's it's very light, you know, very little olive oil and everything else. It's just vegetables, no butter or anything.
Cool.
Definitely a misconception that we use a lot of butter at Char.
Oh,
we really
good.
Don't use. We very
it's
use
one
very
of your
little.
Innovations from the classic Southern cooking.
Right, yeah. Right. People have definitely said, "Oh, there's a lot of butter in this cooking."
No, I like how really. You don't have a lot of biscuits too. You know, people always gravitate fried chicken and biscuits. You know, and that's
right.
Not like you don't have to have that with everything, as far as I know.
Correct. I'm actually, you know, it's funny. I told the owners, I know collard greens is a Southern staple, but growing up, I grew up in Texas, and my mom's from the South, and I just never was a fan of collard greens.
Yeah,
and so,
you could cook any other greens like that.
Yeah, I'm a big, huge fan of kale.
Yeah.
I love kale. I always look forward to the, you know.
If you can get it, why not use it? You know,
absolutely.
A better ingredient.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, anytime, you know, especially in the fall when the really nice kale comes around, we treat it like that kind of same sort of, you know, I guess you would treat collard greens, you know, kind of add some bacon and onions and all that good stuff.
Mm. All right, more into this good stuff. Right when we come back, Matt picked out a song. It's a friend's band.
This is, some very close friends of mine back in Austin. They just released this album called This Quiet, and the name of the band is Markov.
Right on. All right, be right back. Matt Greco's Friends Band on Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. Today's show is brought to you by White Oak Pastures, who are proudly sponsoring Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza today. So Matt's the chef at Char Number 4. If you haven't checked out this restaurant, I highly, highly recommend. I wanted to ask Matt what some of his favorite ingredients of the moment were, and you had an interesting answer.
You know, I always like it. We were talking about corn, and I think definitely, you know, one of my favorite ingredients, especially this time, is any form of like shelling bean. Right now we have, you know, lots of cranberry beans.
Right.
And I'm crossing my fingers, but it's not looking too hopeful. I think lima beans are always my all-time favorite, like shelling bean, and last year they were beautiful, and
I bought
so many of them. Uh-huh. And the year before they were really small and they weren't very nice. So I'm hoping that it's not going to be a repeat of 2 years ago. I'm hoping that it's going to be a repeat of last summer.
Yeah,
or last late summer.
When should we start seeing those? Now-ish?
Yeah, they always say it's like mid to late August.
Mm-hmm.
But last year I want to say they came up a little bit. This is really strange because I know last year everything was 2 weeks behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the rain in the last spring. And because, you know, I had all the bad tomatoes last summer and all that stuff. But I could be wrong, but I just remember getting the lima beans earlier last year, and they definitely went very far into September.
So how I'm not from the South. You're from Austin, correct? Or?
I grew up all over Texas.
Okay, all over Texas.
I was gonna say
I never really worked with fresh lima beans before.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah.
I grew up, I think my thing for me is my grandmother used to grow them. And for me, that was always one of those, like, I don't know how she made it, but there was always some sort of like lima beans and this kind of like tomato broth. I don't know if it was just like a canned beef broth with like some tomatoes or whatnot. But so anytime that I make them, I try to like kind of stick with that, you know, just like some fresh tomatoes and garlic and white wine.
And this is definitely the kind of stuff that you would not want to mash or puree, right?
No. I mean, you can do that, but I think, you know, lima beans are just, they have a different texture to them.
They're kind of like fava beans.
But definitely not as, they don't ever
not
get
as
that
green.
Yeah, and they also don't get that kind of, they're definitely a little bit creamier.
Yeah.
Than fava
more
beans.
More starchy a little.
Yeah, whereas the fava beans, I would say, is more starchy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm getting all mixed up here. So what would you do with the lima beans as like a preparation? Like,
we did, you know, actually did two things with them last. Just give an example. We were doing some dinners over at La Conda Verde, and we were doing the first course, and we were doing our bacon. That's one of our appetizers at Char. We always have it's like a 4 ounce thick cut portion of our homemade bacon, and you know, usually it's, and then we garnish it with some whatever seasonal side. Right now it's with heirloom tomatoes and a grilled onion vinaigrette.
Good year for tomatoes.
Yeah. So, and then, but then for this event we did same thing. We did we did just braise the lima beans with some fresh tomatoes.
That's
and olive oil and roasted garlic and white wine, and served
nice.
The bacon with that.
That sounds good.
And then we've served it with, you know, eggplant and grilled leg of lamb before.
Oh.
So, which is always nice.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, a nice little soup, maybe. Oh, they're kind of too big for a soup. No?
If you want to go the, like, minestrone kind of minestrone, like, style, absolutely.
A fresh summer minestrone?
Yeah.
I can see that. That'd be fun. So, you also have a big event that you're cooking for right now, this barbecue in...
Right, this Sunday we're doing the Hudson River Blues and Barbecue Festival.
Blues and Barbecue Festival.
Right.
Can we get tickets for that, or is it open to the public?
It's open to the public.
Okay.
Yeah.
Blues and Barbecue Festival. And you're one of how many restaurants?
There's only, I believe, 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
What made you get into this?
We were asked to do it, and us, and I know another local... barbecue-esque restaurant, Fatty Q, is also on the bill. And I think in the past, some of the more larger barbecue-style restaurants like Dinosaur and Blue Smoke and those other things have done in the past. And I think Dinosaur's there, and Brother Jimmy's is actually also there.
Yeah, so they're trying to get some fresh blood in here.
Just, I guess, as we... Yeah, something on the more smaller scale,
cool.
Like ourselves. So, you know, we're... going to be doing that and just trying to stick with our kind of style. We have some in fact I was planning on having the lima beans but they're not around, so we're going with cranberry beans right now, for as of now.
The other topic of choice.
Yes.
I was just on a radio show. I was telling Matt about cranberry beans. That is so cool. Like, I'm just getting into growing these things. So you said your grandmother used to grow them,
right?
And maybe this is like, I don't know, I've had difficulties growing them here with this climate. Maybe other people are too.
I couldn't begin to tell you what the proper climate would be for them.
You just cook them. So a while back I was kind of informally asking a bunch of friends I knew who are chefs, like, so this is like amazing, you know, I see what you cook in the restaurants, it's all great, but really, what do you cook when you're at home? Do you order out? Do you cook at all? And Matt had a really cool, like, response, but you want to go into that? Or?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I am fortunate. I like to cook at home. My wife and I, we kind of have a system of, you know, we like to, like, kind of knock out, like, maybe like 3
teamwork.
Big dishes, you know, at once. So that way we have something, you know, something like nice and healthy sitting around.
That's so cool.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, you don't want to cook for every single meal, and you end up like getting lazy and eating, you know, cheese, which is what I do sometimes.
Lying around.
Yeah, just
scraps
or
of bacon.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah.
Those days are over, I guess.
And or, you know, like you said, ordering in. So that's a lot of times that's what we do. You know, like I said, we just made, went to the market and got a bunch of stuff. And one of our favorites is just polenta and like some caponata. And
what's caponata?
I'm sorry. Ratatouille, I apologize. Which is very similar to caponata. But yeah, so just, you know, tomatoes and eggplant and zucchini and peppers. And we'll just make a big, you know,
do you bake it or cassoulet?
Yeah, we, you know, we have the little
covered skillet thing. No, casserole, Dutch oven.
Yeah,
Dutch oven.
Sorry, I apologize.
I stole Matt from the kitchen of a very busy day.
That's all right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, the, you know, like the Le Creuset's.
Yeah, and just let it simmer
there. Yeah, and we just cook it down and keep it covered until it's, and then, you know, we just throw it in the fridge and, you know, like I said, that's a meal. That's a meal for, you know.
Definitely keep all vegetarian too.
All vegetarian.
You're kidding me. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
absolutely. I like that. Maybe you should put it on your menu.
It's definitely a good way. We've done it before. We've done some ratatouille and stuff, you know, on the menu.
I do shortcut ratatouille, which is like one vegetable and braise it and put it on polenta. Right.
Yeah, the polenta is great. You know, it's great too, is the instant polenta. You know, it's definitely a pretty good product instead of having to, you know, stir it for you know, a good hour or so.
Yeah.
You just, you know, of course, you know, you're always going to add lots of cheese and olive oil to make it taste really good.
You could, yeah. That always changes things. So say you're like having a nice meal at home, like a really, you know, you're taking the night off to have a nice,
right,
luxurious meal. What would you cook at home?
My wife usually orders a couple of ribeye steaks for us.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of our, you know, when we used to cook dinner together on every Sunday night, that was kind of our date.
Dinner
was always a nice ribeye, and you know, just very, again, same thing, you know, it's like maybe a nice salad,
mm-hmm,
or whatever vegetables we had. You know, like I said, if we, you know, had some kale, we would definitely like cook some kale out.
Cool.
Yeah,
and it's quick.
Well, that's what's great about steaks, is they're actually very quick.
And then all of a sudden you have this big huge meal in front of you.
Exactly.
I love it.
And it feels very you know,
that sounds,
feels very nice, because you know, you have a nice ribeye in front of you.
That sounds really nice. Great job. And you've been married now for a couple of years?
I have been married for about, technically I guess, 15 months.
Okay.
Yeah, a little over a year.
Congratulations on that.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, I'll have to come by your restaurant again, and you know, this big barbecue thing's next Sunday. I'll have to check that out.
This coming Sunday.
Yeah. Cool. Well, good luck on working on banging out, what was it, 1,000 portions?
Yeah, we're prepping out for about like 1,000 to 1,200 portions of all the stuff that we're doing. So, you know, we have to make sausage for all of that.
All right. So. You better get back in the kitchen. Thanks so much for being here, Matt.
It was a great pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks. I'd like to thank Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener and everybody at Heritage. We'll see you next week. This is Let's Eat In.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.